Aloha. Right on. My name is Colin. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to take a moment and thank all of those who have showed us the way. I know we all have people on our journey who have been great help. Okay, so I put some notes together. I'm going to fumble through them just in case I get lost in my train of thought. I want to take a moment also to thank Eva for putting me on the program and putting this program together. I want to thank everybody who's in service at this convention. What a lot of work to put this whole thing on. So the theme for our convention is happy, joyous, and free. And when I think of the word free, I think of freedom from the bondage of self. You know, I mean, not only am I free from the need to drink, and I'm not sitting in jail, but more importantly, I'm free from me. You know, that was always my dilemma. I didn't get it really until I got here. So I'm going to read the first two sentences of the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. My will. You know, when I think about the third step, it says that we made a decision to turn our lives and our will over to the care of God as we understood him. And to me, my will is everything I think I need and everything I want to make me happy. And when I find that, when I get what I want more. More, more, more. And I just suffer from that. And it's an interesting concept for me that it was easy when I was a drunk because there was the only thing I wanted was more booze. Getting sober was a different deal. I sobered up, got a little bit going on in my life, and I began to run on some self-will again thinking I got this. And suddenly my laundry list of things I need to be happy, I was looking at it going, wow, how'd I get here? How did I get here? I'm right back in it again. And I wrestle that today. I wrestle all of that today. It doesn't go away. I just learned to manage it a little bit. You know, I should have said where my home group is, and I will now. It's on Kalama Park Happy Hour on the South Shore of Maui. And there's about 30 of us here from Maui, and I think only a couple of us got in. We were sitting outside having a cup of coffee this morning, and that line started building, and I went and asked somebody, what's the line for? And they said, this meeting. And I went, uh-oh. So if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, anybody new, let's say in your first year, raise your hand. I bet you didn't know we have a secret handshake. I'll show it to you. I got it. All right. So on page 23, I have a lot of favorite sentences in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to start with this one. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind. Wait a minute. I trust my thinking. I trust my thinking, and look where it got me. This is my current home group right here. Thank you guys for showing up. You know, self-reliance got me to Alcoholics Anonymous. Self-reliance. Self will run riot. You know, there's a sentence in the book, the alcoholic running on self steps on the feet of his friends and just creates wreckage. But isn't that funny? If you got between me and my drink, I stepped all over your feet. Anything that got between me and a drink, I just cast aside. And I didn't realize I was doing that until it was all gone. Gone. And on that day, I didn't stop drinking. I thought it might be a good idea. And I don't know if you've ever been to the south side of Maui. It is absolute beauty. But I lived in hell for 5 years, walking in the understanding that I may have a drinking problem and I'll quit tomorrow. And guess what? You know, tomorrow never came. Tomorrow is that elusive carrot on the stick. And what was more important than tomorrow was my right now with a glass of vodka in my hand. And I'll tell you, on the south shore of Maui, the best served drink is 98 degrees under the front seat of my car. Page 62, selfishness, self-centeredness. That was the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, self. And, you know, I can honestly tell you, in my first year of recovery, I was so thrilled. The day came, I can't tell you what day it was, but I hadn't thought about a drink that day. And I mean, that was like, that's the miracle of it, right? On page 86, that's the miracle of it. But that day was just the tip of the iceberg for me. You know, I didn't bottom out and come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I bottomed out about day 75 sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Untreated alcoholism for 75 days, sitting in circles, sitting in rooms with you guys, not understanding the solution. I was so thirsty. I was hanging on by the edge, just hanging on. And I finally did what each and every one of us did at some point in our recovery. I said, help. Barely said it, but someone was there and heard me. You know, those words were so courageous. Can I get some help? A guy came over. I'd never talked to him. He introduced himself. He said, my name's so-and-so. I'd be more than happy to have a conversation with you. Maybe we can get you through the steps. And that man did that for me. And I'm eternally grateful for that beginning of that process of understanding the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I walked into a, and I still do this, if I walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and behind me is the traditions and the steps, I don't know about you, but that looks like the pool rules. When I walk onto a swimming pool, I do not read the pool rules. I know how to swim. I don't need your directions on that. And it's funny, I can be sitting in a meeting today, kind of in self, look up at those 12 steps and go, yeah, maybe later. So funny, I know the solution. I know how simple the process is. And yet, I'll try self-reliance and self-will even today. It's just, I wrestle it. I got this. Fear, an evil corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. Fear. In the inventory process, as we all know, talk to Mr. Brown and whatnot, and we get to fear. And then the fear inventory. And I spend more time in the fear inventory with the people I go through this process with than the resentments, because all that resentment does is get us to the fear anyhow. But we got to start somewhere. But I know today that what is the fear? It's the fear that is encasing my self-pity, my self-delusion, and the bondage of self. You know, when I think of the bondage of self, I think of me in a jail, self-imposed by my own beliefs, my old ideas. The book says, until we let go of our old ideas, the results are nil. What's an old idea? Well, the first old idea I got when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous was, I'm not like those people. What am I doing? I'm separating myself from you automatically. That's like a default position, though. I'm not like you. You can't help me. Old idea. That's an easy one to find. That was a really easy one to get at. They get a little bit more hidden in my makeup when I really want to start looking what the fears are. As everybody, I'm sure, that's looked at a four-step says, I don't got much fear. If I had some more money, I'd be all right. If I had a better girlfriend, I'd be all right. If my boss would listen to me, if my job, my coworkers, they were more helpful, I'd be all right. All that is fear. Lack of self-worth. Lack of self-worth is a big one. You don't like me. If you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. We all have talked about that stuff. But what does that truly mean? I have no self-worth. How do I get my self-worth? Well, we know how that happens. We go through the steps. We be of service. I think this whole process of each and every one of us in here today, being of service, whether we realize it or not, it's feeding our self-worth. It gives us enough courage to get up and come back tomorrow. You know, there were no tomorrows. It was that was something way out in the future, tomorrow. So anyhow, back to the jail. I have lots of bars. I have lots of them. And I'm sure if I mention a few, which I will, I'll be happy when, and a litany of the list, when I have her, when she leaves me. I'm a classic. Another girlfriend will fix it. Fortunately, on that note, I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. At about a year sober, I got into a relationship with a sober lady. She had about 7 years. She was 10 years older than me. We had an incredible relationship for about 12 and a half years, and she passed away in my arms suddenly last March. 1 o'clock in the morning, she had a heart attack in my arms. You want to talk about fear? Life is going one way, and in the next minute, holy yeah. So, I'm so grateful for all of those events in my life because it gave me the opportunity to really delve into freedom from the bondage of self. I did a four-step immediately. You do a four-step. I did. And it all boiled down to the biggest one of my fears of all in that cage is what's going to happen to me. I mean, that just put the lid on it. Boom, that encases everything. What's going to happen to me? Self-reliance. I'm relying on self if I figure that one out. How can I best make my world now fulfilling? How can I best do anything worthwhile in my life? You know what I did that morning? I went to my other home group, Kihei Morning Serenity. At 7 a.m., I walked into that meeting and let everybody know what happened 5 hours before that. And I've always gone to two meetings a day. I'm kind of that way. And I just continue to go to two meetings a day. And Alcoholics Anonymous has showed me the way, what to do when these things happen. Because left to my own devices, without you guys, I just want to go to the floor in a fetal position and lay there and cry. And I did a lot of that. But not for very long at all, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. I did have the opportunity to allow Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time hold me up and carry me. Because up until that point, I didn't need that, and I didn't realize you guys were there in such strength. And it's an amazing thing I got to witness. Not only did I go through the grieving process, but everybody in my community grieved with me. And I can tell you, so much freedom comes for me to allow that process to happen. So, another thing on the bondage of self. I figure I got two voices in my head. I got my daily voice that walks into a room and starts sizing you up. No, I don't want to talk to them. No, whatever. And then from that judgment, immediately pushes me into another corner, because I'm pretty convinced my bondage is ruled by judgment and fear. And without even realizing it, I judge everything. Unfortunately, I do that, and then there's my true voice as the book alludes to, are innate, my true voice, which I have to then key into and go, okay, what is really going on with myself? You know, that in our nine-step promises, it says we'll intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. Well, that is my innate self. That part of self is what I continue to work on to gain the freedom from me. And that voice is such a whisper, but it's such a strong whisper that keeps me centered. And for whatever reason, when I rely on that, my days go smooth. My life seems to be okay because that voice keeps me in a servant's heart. You know, some mornings I wake up and I got a lot of work ahead of me. I got to be in a lot of places. And that daily voice starts cranking it up and we're on a time frame and everybody needs to get out of my way. And I'm miserable by 11 o'clock. I'm absolutely useless almost. I can't, you know, I got me all over me and I can't take it anymore. I wish I could just unzip it, put it in the closet and get straight to my innate self, my true voice. But it's getting better. You know, it's not the flip of a switch, but it's getting a lot better. I just got my 5-minute note reminder. So that innate voice, and what information I get in that innate voice, you know, I wish it was as easy as a text or an email or something, but it's that whisper, and when I pay close attention to it, it always gives me the guidance I need. But first I have to ask for help. I'm pretty convinced unless I ask for help, I don't get much. I get self-reliance again. But when I ask for help, ask for guidance, that whisper is able to give me what I need to make it. And that, to me, gets me the clear understanding of the process of Alcoholics Anonymous, moving me from self-reliance to God-reliance. Self-reliance to God-reliance. I like to play with a slinky. I wish it was that easy. Just throw it over here. And I'm God-reliant right now. But I wrestle in the middle, probably more towards self-reliance. And I know why that is. It's so invested in as being a human being and who I am that I'm entitled to my will. My will. And the God-reliance says, may I better do thy will. You know, on page 77 at the top, it says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to the people and to God and the people around us. And nowhere in that sentence does it say me. But I want to walk out the door and serve me first. And that's my bondage. Servant's heart. If I can walk out the door every morning with a servant's heart, I have a good day. I really do. And I've got that clear understanding, sitting and being of service and having the opportunity of being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Prior to that, life was all about self. And obviously it landed me here. I think in the long run, I always wanted to be here, but I didn't know what here was. I wanted the spiritual path. I wanted the guidance. You know, I don't want anybody to tell me to do, but I want guidance. Classic struggle. Help. It's a lot easier to ask for help today. Okay, I'm running out of time. I do want to say, during the inventory process, I came up with a very interesting... I didn't have relationships prior to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had what I call reactionships. You did something, I reacted. Therefore, you're going to react harder. And we're bantering. And it was, you know, sarcasm. And it was everything contrary to a real relationship. A real relationship with a power greater than myself as well. You know, I viewed the spiritual path in a very gray way. And then In the book, it says there is a solution. Almost none of us like the leveling of our pride, the confession of our shortcomings, which the process requires. And the leveling of my pride allowed me to have a relationship, because it's definitely my pride that runs my judgment and my fear, my false pride. You know, I think I know what's best. I think I know what's best for you. I've definitely come to a place in my life where my number one spiritual principle is, don't meddle in someone else's spiritual path. Don't meddle in someone else's spiritual path. Not even my children's, not my girlfriend's, my fiance, I should say. And my friends, because, you know, it's easy for me to want to do that. And when I say meddle, I don't even think about theirs, because to me, that's meddling. I'm going to leave you with this. I walked into AA, and everybody was different. And today I can say, thank you for that. I want to celebrate the differences, because if you were all like me, it'd be really boring. May the blessings be.
Thank you, Colin. That was wonderful. I really could feel the identification. You reminded me of that line in the Big Book. Is this better? Okay. My sponsor, Joni, was from Texas, and she landed on that line in an effort to teach me something. The problem settles in our mind. You know, it was like a trumpet, you know. It's not italicized in the book, but I always hear it loud and clear. Okay, our next speaker is Katie C. from Minnesota. Help me welcome her.
Hi, my name is Katie, and I'm an alcoholic. Oh, that feels so good early. Okay, I shouldn't say it's early in the morning. It's early in the morning for me. I can tell that you guys are all real sober people because there was like a line of people waiting as I'm coming in. They're like, oh, it's full. And I'm like, no, but I'm speaking. And I get here 15 minutes, which to me is really early. But in real sober life, you guys have been up for like 7 hours, something like that. You've prayed, you've meditated, you've saved everyone. I was watching like TLC in my hotel room. So a few things. I have a sober date. It is April 27th of 2008. And I say that because that means that this is possible. That if I could go from April 26th, having that night of drinking in which I didn't intend to drink, to having a sober date of April 27th of 08 and holding it, that anybody can do this. I have a home group. It's SOL, Students of Life. It is in St. Paul, Minnesota. It is at 8:30 p.m. It is a young people's meeting. I think it might be time for me to change because 8:30 is feeling really late at night now. No, like seriously. And I'm the oldest there. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who guides me with gentleness and love, which is so much of what I need because myself is neither gentle nor loving to myself. And I try to be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous at any opportunity that presents itself, this being one of them. Oddly enough, and I use the word oddly because we know it's not odd, it's exactly how it's supposed to be, I was totally in self when I got the email asking me to do this. I am part of Minnesota Young People in Alcoholics Anonymous, Minipaw, and it was the night before our conference, and I was the programming chair, and I am so in self about how this programming for the conference that starts tomorrow is going to go. And I'm at my parents' house because my printer broke, and I'm printing out the scripts, and they need to be perfect. Because if they aren't perfect, the whole thing's going to fall apart, and everybody's going to look at me, and it's going to be my fault. And so I'm totally in self. I'm italicizing, I'm making sure the spacing's right. Like, I've lost my mind. It's like 11 o'clock at night, like I'm losing it, and I get this email, and I immediately think, what is no, this can't be for me. And then I see freedom from the bondage of self, and I was like, crap. I gotta figure this out by July 3rd. And so, right, and I haven't. So if anybody's here thinking that I'm gonna have this figured out, I apologize. I don't. But I emailed our delegate, Terry, and I said, I got this. How did this happen? This can't get me out of this. Like, tell me that I need to send the email back because it's not for me. And he's like, no, it's for you. I nominated you. Thank you. I'm putting you on the speaker list for the people that we know. And that to me, you know, oh gosh, here I go. And so it was that weird sense of self that, you know, like the slinky, thank you, of me wanting to tell everyone that, like, I'm so important, I'm speaking in Atlanta, and me wanting no one to know and to show up to an empty room, because carrying the message is so important to me today, that for me, it's not about what you think of KDC from St. Paul, Minnesota. It's hopefully that somebody in this room will get something that I said, which is what God's telling me to say right now, because that's what I prayed for since yesterday when I saw the size of these rooms. I thought it was going to be like 20 people. That's what's important to me today, that myself is used as a conduit for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, for the still suffering alcoholic, whether you're still suffering and you're at that point in your sobriety where I've been, where I'm way too sober to feel this way, I'm way too sober to have done this, I'm way too sober to be this self-destructive, I'm not telling anybody what I've done, said, or thought, I'm going to hang on and it's going to get better, and it doesn't. Or you're new and you're the traditional still suffering alcoholic because you're so close to your last drink. And so I'm not an expert. This is my experience, strength, and hope. And I know that God's words, because I prayed with my previous sponsor who's here behind a pole in the midst of 1,000 people and didn't think, what does everyone think of me? I think, oh my gosh, God, please hear this in the midst of all these other people, that I want to carry what's important to the hearts of the people that are sitting in this room. And so being helpful to me is what's important. It's not being cool. Being cool is what got me in Alcoholics Anonymous, or trying to be cool. I mean, that's why I took my first drink. I was, you know, such a goody-two-shoes, on the straight and narrow. Like, I didn't see a PG-13 movie till I was 13, because, like, that's the law. Right? Oh, and I wanted to see Aspen Extreme so badly, and everyone snuck into it, and I stayed in, I don't know what we bought tickets for instead. But somebody offered me a beer, and I was like, sure, I'll take one. And the audible gasp of the crowd, like the group that surrounded me, turning and being like, Katie's what? And I was like, yeah, I'm having a beer. Like, that, I chased that feeling for the next 13 years of my drinking career. And I wasn't good at it, and it wasn't cool. And my definition of cool, thankfully, has changed significantly. What's cool is being in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous and listening to the message. What's cool now is picking up my phone when I don't want to, because I rarely still do want to answer the phone and hear somebody else. But that's what's cool to me, learning about Alcoholics Anonymous and being of service. And thankfully, my first sponsor in this program told me, if you want to stay sober, you're going to have to let go of being cool right now. She's like, the cool kids don't stay sober. She's like, the cool kids are not going to the small group. They're outside smoking. The cool kids are still going out to the bars on Friday and Saturday nights. The cool kids are hanging on for dear life because they still want to be cool. She's like, and I don't see the cool kids staying sober. And I was so glad that I finally got released from being cool because I wasn't good at it. I wanted to be that AA, you know, that AA like nerd. Like, oh, well, on this page, what they're actually referring to in the original, like that was what I wanted to do. And thankfully that has served me quite well. So what it was like when I was in self was what was discussed previously. It was about me and getting to that drink. And whatever came between me and that drink was, like it was just said, was cast aside. If I had to lie, if I had to cheat, if I had to steal, if I had to fight, if I had to yell at you, whatever took me to get to that next drink was what myself was all about. My mind was occupied by when my next drink was coming. My mind then got to the point when it was occupied when my next drink was coming, when I had a drink in my hand. And so I spent all that time worrying about self, what you thought, what you were doing, what I was going to do, what you were going to do, back and forth around this. And there was that one drink at the beginning that let go of self for me, That one drink where that mellow glow stole over me and I felt that warmth in my chest, and it lasted for a couple minutes and then it was gone again. And I always wanted to have that feeling of peace and ease which my first drink brought me. And that quit working really, really quickly. And so my pursuit of self continued to be about getting that drink, and whoever I needed to pretend like I was friends with or care about to get it was exactly what I did. At the end of my drinking, there wasn't any self left. Like, there was a shell of a human being who was wandering around drinking, crying in her car behind the wheel, showing up to work when I felt like it or when I could get it together. There wasn't even a self for me to try to get to. There was nothing left of me. And that was like the me that had the dreams when I was like 5 years old of who I wanted to be. And it wasn't who I was when I got sober. And it wasn't who I was when I was drinking. And I'm working to get back to that, because that's who I want to be, is that 5-year-old self who had these dreams and loved people and was excited and would go out into the world and would just show up because that was who I was. I wasn't at that point where I was worried about what you thought and how that was going to affect me and what I thought about you, because I spent a lot of time thinking about you and my problems with you. And so when I was in that rock bottom, and my rock bottom wasn't an event, it was a time frame of like 3 years where it was like Groundhog Day, but drinking. I mean, really, like, I know, you know, it was the same stuff every day with some different people and a different guy I was dating and a different manipulation of what music I listened to and where I worked and where I lived and all of the rest of that. But it was the same. It was the terror on my chest when I woke up and knew I couldn't get a drink because I had to go do something or I had to get to work. It was a terror on my chest when I woke up trying to think about what I did last night and it being a blank space from 7 p.m. until I woke up that morning. And so self was all that it was. It was a bleak, you know, the four horsemen where I was, you know, they were driving my chariot. I wasn't in charge of that at all. And so what happened was that I couldn't live like that anymore. Exactly like the book says. I couldn't live with it. I couldn't live without it. And in a moment of clarity, which is one of the reasons that I believe in God, I don't think God's name is God. I think it's bigger than that. I just say God because I'm lazy. But in a moment of clarity, overlooking a sunset at the Grand Canyon, like, so, of course that's how it happened to me. Because I was so cynical, you know, that a sunset, oh, forget a sunset, was exactly where these thoughts came, which was, my drinking's the problem. I need to quit drinking, and I need God back in my life. And those were thoughts that I had never thought. I went through my journals a year ago from my drinking career. That's horrifying. I don't recommend it. Oh, wow. But it was very interesting because I would do this thing where I would get out a journal and I'd fill it like a third full. Because I had these dreams of finishing these journals and people reading them and they were so eloquent and I had little hand drawings and all this stuff. And what it really was that I'd get a new journal and I'd get the new pens and I would write all the new plans, all the things I was going to do. And I could have just photocopied that and changed the date from 13 to 26. Because it was, I need to stop dating guys like this. I need to date guys like this, which never happened. I need to wake up at 6 a.m. I need to not eat sugar. I need, like, all of the things that I was going to do to make things different. And I probably had like 3 dozen of these third full journals. And one time I wrote, I think I drink too much. And that was it. That's the insidious nature of this disease. That never once was it my drinking. It was all these other things. So I had one sentence in like 500 pages that didn't even say I drink too much. I think I drink too much. Tomorrow's going to be different because I'm going to do all the following things and read the inspirational books and natural wines and all of it. That's what I thought I was going to do. It didn't work. So what it was like now, I ended up coming to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Another time where self was removed from me. I don't remember driving to it. I don't remember how it happened. I remember I was watching the World Series. The god-awful Yankees were playing. I see Yankee hats out there. Good for you. And that drove me to Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? So I was in my apartment, and I had a TV on a chair, and I was sitting in a chair, and that's all I had. And somebody had previously said to me, Katie, you should go to Alcoholics Anonymous. You're an alcoholic. And so I orbited AA online. I read the PDF of the big book, didn't know what it was saying. I downloaded a meeting directory for the city of St. Paul and printed it out, which was like a ream of paper because we have like 1,000 meetings there. And I tried to clip it to my fridge and it fell down and I left it there for like ever. But I ended up in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for a long time when I was in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, it was still self. One of the ways that I know that I have some reduction of self is that I no longer, when I'm in a meeting, count how many people are till I get to share. I remember that, like, anxiety of being in a meeting and being in the circle and being like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Oh my gosh, stop talking. When am I going to, you know? And finally it became, you laugh because it's true. Finally it became me listening to what other people had to say. Knowing that other people in this room had a valid experience and could help me and that I needed their help. And that didn't happen for a while, but it was one of those things like in the appendices where it started happening before I even knew it happened. All of a sudden I was there and I was like, I haven't thought about how many people are sharing ahead of me and how much time I have to wait before I get to speak in a while. I don't know when it happened, but it did. For me, it's about focusing on what I need to do rather than what I want to do. Trying to check what a want versus a need is. I live in, I need, and most of the time those statements are I want. I need this job. I need this money. I need this guy. No, I want those things. And my wants are not anything that I have any business ever having. Ever. The stuff that I want is the stuff that's going to destroy me. That's that self, that insidious self that's still trying to get me back to a drink. As opposed to the self that I know is the God part of me. The part of me that says, what you want to do is help people. What you want to do is be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and carry the message. What you want to do is be an example of a woman of dignity and grace, like all the women who have come before me, that I see walk through things that I have no idea how to do. I'm still, in a lot of ways, involved in self. I spent a lot of time thinking about what I was going to wear. I spent a lot of time thinking about who was going to be in this room and what it was going to look like. I still spend a lot of time wondering about what's going to happen to me. My dad was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. He's only 68. And I catch myself thinking about how this affects me all the time. Why this is a problem for me. Why this is inconvenient. Why trying to help him clear out his office of stuff that he's been holding on to for 4 years is a problem for me. And thankfully, I have that other voice in my head, the voice of Alcoholics Anonymous, that says, show up and be of service. Be of service to your father. Be of service to your mother. Be a conduit for God's love, even though, like, your dad's driving you nuts because he's asked you 6 times where you're going this weekend and why I'm going there and what's happening with that. And so that self has become such an interesting new dynamic in my life. The committee of voices now, instead of being a dozen, is 2. It's the voice of Alcoholics Anonymous, which to me is the voice of God. And it's the voice of me still having the dragon that lives inside of me wanting to get to a bar and get a drink in my hand as quickly as possible. And I've had enough experience here to know which voice to listen to. That doesn't mean that I don't spend and I haven't spent time dancing with the voice that tells me to go get a drink. Dancing with the voice that tells me that I need to get into oblivion. Whether that's by ending my life, getting a drink, engaging in behavior that's going to end up getting me there. I still do that. That is a comfortable, wonderful place for me sometimes. You know, sitting in my apartment, ordering food in, watching the same DVDs over and over again, thinking about how my life is so bad and it's so hard and it's so difficult and why me and why don't I have the things that I thought I would have at this point in my life. Alcoholics Anonymous, thankfully, has taught me that when I get to that spot, what I need to do is be of service. And sometimes I can't necessarily be of service. So I say, God, remove me of the pain that I'm feeling right now just enough that I can help somebody. And the magic, air quotes, magic, is that within 5 minutes, 10 minutes, somebody called me, somebody texted me, I need to be somewhere that I said I would be. My cat needs to be fed. I got to do something for somebody else. And that's when that perspective changes. And suddenly I feel good enough to pick up the phone, to show up for what I'm supposed to. But that self still can totally and utterly destroy me. And that's why staying in Alcoholics Anonymous and staying active and being a participant is absolutely critical. And still asking for help. Because I don't know how to do a lot of the things that I'm supposed to be doing still. I don't know how to walk through what's going on with my dad with any level of dignity and grace and not going and picking up a drink. I mean, on Sunday, I'm going through his office and I'm finding stuff, unopened bills, that's not my father. Unopened mail for my mom, that's not what he would do. And I immediately thought, this would be a great reason to like go get drunk. This is a great reason. And then I think I have to speak on Friday at a conference of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, but that's the thing. Like, for me, it's not that I don't drink because of this, you know, wonderful character that's now embodied me where I'm this, like, pure as the driven snow. I don't drink. I don't swear. I don't smoke. Like, all of that. That has nothing to do with it. It has to do with that I'm in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've buttressed myself with service commitments and people that love me and wonder how I'm doing that remind me of staying sober and not picking up a drink. Because I'm an alcoholic. Drinking's always going to be somewhere in there. I don't have the desire to, but I think about it. I don't take an action around it, but I still wonder about what it would be like. And then I think, you know, there's like an article on the internet about this, like, something that you could do and you could drink normally again. Right? Right. And I remember my sister saying something about it to me. And I looked at her and I was like, I don't want to drink normally. I want to drink like an alcoholic. Right? I have no interest in some pill I can take where I can go have one. I have no interest in a pill where I can take where I can go have four. Like, I want to be able to go have 100 with no spiritual, physical, mental, emotional, or financial consequences. And until that happens, I'm here. And I don't want it to happen because I love being here. I love being with my people. I love us getting on the MARTA and people being like, what is happening on my train to work today? Who are all these like jovial people with matching necklaces, like talking, like, what is this? But that's my reality. Like self is the drinking me. And the other part of me is the part that loves and belongs in Alcoholics Anonymous and is so incredibly grateful that I get to have these experiences. I always had a dream that I was going to be like really famous and that I was going to be a famous singer. And so like today, like I can be like, oh, there's a line for my talk today. It was like really close. when I get a medallion, it's like, oh, this is my Academy Award speech. All of those things. And so I traded the stuff that I wanted for the stuff that I needed. And self, for me, is something that I still struggle with. I don't think it's going to be ever gone. But that's that spiritual journey of getting rid of the stuff that I don't need, removing the stuff that keeps me from loving you and letting you love me, keeps me from holding the door for somebody, keeps me from showing up. And so I'm really grateful for that bondage of self. It keeps me here, because if that got solved really quickly, I would have been gone. But it's always there and it's always a struggle. And I'm so grateful to be able to share a small part of my experience. And I hope that was helpful for somebody out here, because that's what it really is about. I don't want anybody to go back to that place drinking and driving in their car. I don't want anybody to go back to that place where they have nothing. Because here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll get not what you want, but what you need, and that will eventually be what your true self really wanted all along. So thank you for letting me share. Oh, yeah.
That was wonderful. Katie, thank you. It reminded me of what it was like for me when I first came into AA. There was me. Capital M, me and you people. And I'm looking out over this room today and I'm thinking, we're an us, you know? And I learned how to ask you guys the question, what do you think I need to do? That was like the opening of a door to all the riches of AA that Katie was describing and Colin was describing. Help me welcome our third speaker, Terry B. from California.
Hi, everyone. I'm Terry, alcoholic. So just after Katie finished, a bunch of people left, and I was taking it very personally. Deeply hurt. My sobriety date is September 26, 1976. Thank you. I mean, it's not bad. It's 38 years and change, so you don't have to do the math. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous the day after my 21st birthday, which is a masterpiece of bad timing, and didn't intend to stay. Knew I got here too early and by mistake. And in spite of myself, I've been here for that long, which really surprises me, and for which I'm so grateful. My home group is the Cottonwood Creek Park meeting that meets on Sunday mornings in Encinitas, California, which is in the San Diego area. And, yeah, my people. It's just a great group. I'm just so grateful to be here. I can hardly speak, which would be in a problem, wouldn't it? And as Katie and Colin were talking, first of all, thanks, guys, so much. I was, you know, mostly listening when I wasn't thinking about what I was going to say. And do you know, as I was thinking about this, and I really, truly am so honored and so extraordinarily privileged to be here and to be having mic time, it's unbelievable. When I was a kid, I was unbelievably shy, like paralyzingly shy. Couldn't talk if there was more than one person there. And often, if it was just one, it was a one-way conversation with them. And but I was just unable to talk. And so the fact that I'm able to do this at all is really, really quite remarkable. When I drank and used, my shyness evaporated, curiously. And then when I got sober, it all came back. And I had to learn how to be. I had to learn how to talk, and I had to learn how to tell the truth, and I had to learn how to. Not just think about me, because as a shy kid, I'm sure that there are some of you here, you know, you spend a lot of time in your head. And it's not, I realized when I was sober for a few years that my shyness was absolutely about self-absorption. I didn't think much of myself, but I thought always of myself, right? And that's what it was. And if I wasn't worried about me, I was worried about what you were thinking about me, but it was always about me. And so this is a very appropriate topic. And like I said, when I got sober, all of that came back. And I would sit in meetings, and just like Katie described, you know, I would hear almost nothing that was said. A few words would leak in by accident, but I would hear almost none of what anybody else said because I was thinking about what I was going to say and knowing that you were going to remember what I said 3 weeks ago. Right? And I remember... one time somebody said, nobody is worried about what you're saying because they're all thinking about what they're saying too. So it's like, oh, okay, good. So the heat is off. You know, I am a much freer person today than I was in so many ways, and I could not have imagined my life today. Absolutely could not have imagined. I came into AA, as I said, too young and by mistake. But I had nowhere else to go, really, and knew that I wasn't going to make it here, and knew that I was going to fail here like I did everywhere else. But really, my journey has been very much about working in all three areas of the triangle, right? Service, unity, and recovery. And I didn't do that because I'm saintly. And I didn't do that because I'm smart and virtuous and good. I did that because I didn't know what else to do. And I'm so grateful that I didn't have a lot of good ideas left. because when I came in, you know, people said 90 meetings in 90 days, and I said, okay. I mean, I didn't have a full calendar at the time, so I didn't have a lot else going on. And I was terrified of what would happen if I didn't, so I went to a lot of meetings. And I was young at the time, so I got real involved in young people's AA, and thank God for that. Right, I learned how, and Katie and I were talking about this a little bit before the meeting started. I learned in Young People's AA. I got involved in the All California Young People's AA roundup and worked on that. And it was the first time that I had completed anything. Honestly, like I started with the committee. We were involved in the bid process, and I stayed through the convention, and that was huge for me. And I learned how to keep a commitment. Because I learned how to keep a commitment in Alcoholics Anonymous. I became a secretary of a meeting, and I learned how to keep a commitment. I learned how to show up. Showing up was not my strong suit, right? I'd show up if it was convenient. Disappointing people was what I did routinely. So I learned how to do that, and I learned a little bit how to get out of myself with service, but also with particularly with helping other people, sponsoring people, right? Because when you sponsor somebody, they occasionally want you to listen to them. And I learned how to do that eventually. And I remember, I mean, I started doing 12-step work because that's what people did, because that's just what you do, right? And I wanted to fit in desperately, so I did that, knowing that it didn't matter, knowing it wouldn't work for me, knowing that nobody would pay attention. But I started doing that. And what happened is that initially I was focusing completely on myself, of course, and as a result of that, I realized one day that I was actually listening to what somebody else said, and that I really cared about the outcome, that I wasn't jealous, that I didn't wish it had happened to me, that I wasn't critical. It was like I really cared deeply about what they were saying, truly, without any benefit to me, and that was a little tiny step out of myself. The fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, this is so great. This is like a family reunion, right? And I've learned how to belong. I've learned I don't have to have just one or two people in my life, right? I have a lot of people in my life, and some I hold very close, and some I hold not as close. But all of you are important to me, you know. And I've learned how to care about you, even if I don't know you well. I've learned how to care about you. And there are people that I care about deeply that I barely know. Isn't that great? So I've learned a little bit about how to get out of self because I've participated in AA, again, not because I wanted to, not because I'm, you know, spiritually evolved, but because that's just what we do. And I'm so glad that sometimes all we have to do is the next indicated step that somebody else suggests, that I don't have to have all the ideas. And then, of course, taking the steps is helpful. And oh, that. And my journey through the steps has been really remarkable, really remarkable. So I did the steps early, and I had a sponsor early on who said to me something very, very profound, because I wanted to get the steps. I didn't want to do them until I could get them right. You know what I'm saying? Like perfect. And she said, if you wait that long, you'll be drunk or dead. So she said... we do the steps wrong so that we can stay sober long enough to do them right. It's like, holy cow, that was like great stuff. And so I was able to do that. And my first run through the steps was as thorough as I could get. Looking back, it wasn't all that thorough. But I've, you know, fortunately, we don't have to do it all in the first year. And so I've had the opportunity to journey through the steps. And I've done that again recently with some women. In my area, and it's just been so extraordinary. And through that process, I get to be free a little bit more of the bondage of self. One of the things I heard early on that I've kept with me is that whenever I compare my insides to your outsides, I'm going to lose every time without exception. Because when I do that, I'm either going to, usually I'm inferior. Vastly inferior. But every now and then, I get to be better than you. And that's not good for me either, because that separates me, right? And one of the things that has helped me, helped relieve me of the bondage of self, has been my connection with all of you. and knowing that we're all in this together. We're all in this together. And that sounds sometimes so trite because we hear it all the time. You know, we are the world. But when I know that we're all in this together, and I believe that, then I can get through anything. And then that also makes me a lot more interested in how you're doing, right? I used to get very intimidated, as I said, with, you know, public speaking and all that sort of thing. And I've had an opportunity professionally to work in some organizations where I need to talk and all that sort of thing. And I used to be very afraid because I was concerned that all of those people would know that I was a kid playing grown up. And which is how I felt all my life, right? Like I'm a fraud. I'm just a fraud. And then I realized, and that's also because I've hung around here, I've realized that everybody's a kid trying to play grown up. Everybody. Not just here. I mean, we're doing that for sure, but we know that. But everybody, right? Everybody does that. And when I realized that, and some of them don't know that they're kids playing grown up, they think they're actual grown ups. But we're all like that. It's like, oh, well, then we can just play, right? None of this is too serious. None of this is too serious. I mean, I get stuck in the bondage of self when I start taking myself and you too seriously. I was thinking about this topic as I was grousing about my hotel room this morning. And I thought, because it's kind of small. And, you know, I mean, there's like, anyway. So I told my husband, I said, I just have to tell on myself out loud. I'm just, you know, a little annoyed at this room. And I'm going to be talking soon about freedom from the bondage of self. And how appropriate is that? But, you know, I still have those moments. But the good news is that I recognize that, right? And I don't have to pick a fight with somebody about they gave me the wrong room and all that sort of silliness. It's got a bed. It's got a bathroom. It's got pretty much everything I need. It's fine. It's fine. But I just notice that I get a little wound up. And so coming over here an hour and a half or 2 hours ago, I was getting wound up about talking. And so I asked some friends that I saw, so just talk me off the ledge, right? And my friend Paul said, well, it's not about you. I said, well, fine. I said, okay, I don't like that. What else you got? And it's true. And he said, you're a conduit. You're a conduit, right? It's not, and it really isn't. And it was absolutely the perfect thing for him to say. It's not about me. And that gives me great freedom from the bondage of self. It is not about me, right? Some of you are going to remember something I said for 5 minutes after you leave this meeting. Most of you won't. And that's fine, right? Because you will do other things in this group. You'll remember something that Colin said or Katie said or something that Dee said or something that, you know, connection you made. It's like, it's not, this isn't the Terry Show. And you all know that. You're all clear about that. But I need to just remind myself about that. So it's just, but my job, and this is really my job. This is my job. This keeps me out of the bondage of self to the extent that I pay attention to it. And makes it very, very clear about what I do. My job is to serve as a conduit, right? I'm the channel. That's all I am. And all I do in my walk through sobriety is share with people what I've heard. I share with people what I've heard. Either in meetings, and this is sometimes to people that I didn't think had anything important to say, right? We all know those people, right? We all go to meetings with them. And I'm not going to listen to that one because for what, you know, the list of 12 reasons. But I'm not going to say, and then they say something profound. It's like, geez, how did that happen? And so my job is to pay attention to everybody. And to remember that they're a conduit and I'm a conduit and that's all we do. That's all we do. It's just a channel. My dad, brought me to my first meeting. He got sober 5 years before I did. And he needed it, let me tell you. And Anyway, my dad, he brought me to my first meeting. And I mean, the story there is that I was living in Sacramento at the time, and the meeting, I knew that the AA meeting started at 8 o'clock, and so I went to his house at 8:30. And he took me to a 10 o'clock meeting. And I've been sober since then. Didn't plan on that, but because I just wanted to talk to him about this potential drinking problem I might have. And anyway, so my dad, he died 9 years ago, and you know, I'm one of eight children, and I'm the only sober one, and so we had this sober connection. And he just reminded me, "You're the channel." You know, and I reminded him, you've left a legacy. I mean, he sponsored all kinds of guys, right? And he was sober a long time, and he left a legacy. And he reminded me, you're just a channel. All of us are just a channel, right? You don't have to come up with anything new. You don't have to write new material, right? It's all there. And most of it I've heard in the first year or two that I've been sober. Right? So it's not new stuff. And so I continue to go to meetings. I know some people are sober for a while and they quit going to meetings. Probably nobody here falls into that category. Unless this is your, you know, one meeting every 5 years, but. Not that I judge. I judge a little bit, but anyway, but I continue to go to meetings because I don't know what I'm going to hear sometimes from the people that I don't think I need to listen to that are going to help me on my journey of how to stay out of self. 5 minutes. I'm just extraordinarily lucky, and I get to be one of many, right? I do have to just tell a quick story. When I was 7 or 8 years sober, my life was falling apart. I mean, it was like disaster, right? I'm sober and my life's falling apart. Now, I'm sure that's never happened to anybody here, but my life was falling apart, and suicide seemed like a good idea. Yeah. And so I was trying to figure out how I could do this. And, you know, interestingly, I kept going to meetings, because I was taught to do that. So I was angry at everybody in the meeting. I was just pissed off all the time. And I'd sit in meetings and grouse and grumble, and people would say, "How you doing?" I'd say, "Fine, great." And, but I was really, I mean, it was a dark, dark place. It was a dark place. And so I was trying to figure out how I could take myself out, because clearly I'm a failure in AA, right? 7 or 8 years sober, and I'm a failure in AA. And so I was trying to figure out how I could take myself out, and I don't like guns, so I couldn't shoot myself. And so I was looking at other options. I didn't live near. Never mind. Anyway, and so I thought, well, I can't do a drug overdose, because if I fail, I'll be a newcomer again. And that just wouldn't do. So I'm in AA wanting to kill myself, but I don't want to look bad doing it, right? So I had a bit of self going on there, and I quit telling the truth, and that was the deal. That was the thing. I quit telling the truth because it was embarrassing, because I didn't look good. And part of my lesson in that, and what happened is that I said the truth out loud by accident one time in a meeting, and it slipped out when I wasn't paying attention. And my sponsor, who I'd fired, I hadn't told her, but I fired her. She saved my life. God bless her. She wrapped herself around me and said, "Honey, did you hear what you just said?" And I did. I did. And the lesson for me in that thing, and I didn't pop right out of this dark place. It was a long, slow climb, but that began the long, slow climb. So two things about that. One is that for those of you that are going through that, and in a group like this, some of you are, right? You're in a dark place. I swear to you, it isn't a permanent condition. Because that's what it felt like to me. That's why I was going to take myself out. It's like, this is what sobriety is going to be like. And I'm going to live a long life, and I can't do it, right? So if you're experiencing that, I promise you, it's not a permanent condition. So continue to go to meetings. Tell the truth to somebody, even if you don't like them. tell the truth to somebody. that was one of the things. And the other thing was, it'll come to me in just a second. I hate when that happens. That's happening with increasing frequency. I'm sure it was good. Give me a minute. I don't know. I don't know. It'll come to me as soon as I sit down. Check with me later. I don't know. Just tell the truth, right? Just tell the truth. That's what it was. Tell the truth. When I, ironic, it is essential for me to tell the truth. Because if I don't, all of it gets in my head. And if stuff is in my head, then it stays stuck there. And then I am absolutely in the bondage of self. I am absolutely in the bondage of self. So whatever stupid, goofy, weird shit you've done, tell the truth about it to somebody, right? I haven't said anything yet that has made people gasp, at least in my presence. They might have had a moment when they left, but they've not done that. And I have had the good fortune of being surrounded by people that love me enough to tell me the truth. And to love me through all of my weird stuff. And all of us are. That's part of the gift that we have here. And so I don't know. Just remember, we're all in this together. All of us are in here together. We're all kids playing grown up. I don't care how grown up you look. I am so grateful for my sobriety. And I'm also so grateful for all of yours. Thanks.